Hello, this is Stacy from The Advisor, and today I'm very excited because we have a very special guest. He is part of our community and he has his own podcast on our site, and it's Sander Vance D, and he is the owner of Moral Eats. And today he'd like to talk about animal welfare. And I'm very excited about to hear this topic. He has a few pointers that he wants to stress. And so I'm very excited to get on to this topic. Sander, can you tell us a little about your thoughts on animal welfare?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd like to answer a couple of key questions that are kind of foundational to any topic around animal welfare. And one of them is, should we be eating animals in the first place from the animal's perspective? And then beyond that, I've also had people ask me, since the mission of Moral Eats is to improve animal welfare, I've had people ask me, why not turn Moral Eats into an animal sanctuary? So I'd like to address that question as well. We'll see where we end up from there. But question number one is, should we be eating animals? Is it in the best interest of the animal? And we have to kind of take a lesson from The Lion King and look at the circle of life and realize that in a circle in general, there's no beginning or end. It just keeps going around and around and around. So what happens when we at When we say that we no longer want animals or prey animals to die, if we don't want to eat prey animals because we think it's in their best interest? Well, because it's a circle, if there's no end, there's also no beginning. So you're basically saying that you don't think these animals have a life that's worth living. You're basically saying that these prey animals shouldn't exist because they're suffering too much. There's too much suffering in their existence, and that it's not worth living. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. Any life involves some suffering. There's no joy without suffering. There's no happiness without sadness. You can't have one extreme without the other. But you can't say that there's nothing but suffering in the life of a prey animal, because their average day does not involve being hunted or being chased or being abused by a farmer. Their average day is basically them socializing with their herd mates, or exploring their environment, eating. They get hungry, so they eat. They get thirsty, so they drink. And that's their average day today. There's lots of small positive interactions and positive experiences throughout that. And then, when done properly, at the end of the life, they have one bad day. And some amount of suffering is unavoidable, but you can even, in the case of agriculture, you can even manage their last moments to be as little stress as possible, basically humane slaughter. In the wild, that's not necessarily the case. Unfortunately, in the wild, there's usually a tremendous amount of suffering involved in the last moment. But even then, it doesn't outweigh a lifetime of positive experiences. So, but if we grant them that these prey animals shouldn't die, or if we go down that road rather, and we say if no prey animals die and no prey animals live, basically there's no existence, then there's also no predators anymore. Because there's no animals for the predators to eat. So like, if the prey animals don't have a life worth living and we end their existence, well, then we're also in extension ending the existence of any predators. So basically we collapse that entire food chain to the point where it is absolutely fragile and not sustainable, because you need that diversity in that food chain for it to exist. So if the food chain exists, the ecosystem will collapse as well. So because you don't have a healthy food chain, you don't have a healthy ecosystem. And basically what we're left with is a very unhealthy ecosystem. And because a lot of these animals are critical for cycling nutrients and stuff like that and improving the environment, but all we're really left with is humans and some non-sentient creatures like sponges and stuff like that. Like, that is not a very positive, happy world to live in. So like, there's something that Freud, the psychologist, termed as the devouring mother. And that is basically a mother that is so overbearing and so protective that their young can't flourish and learn and develop properly. And then you end up with, because that the kids don't develop properly, they stay dependent on their parents, and they never thrive as a functional human being to the point where they're able to help society or contribute to society. So like, and that, so this whole argument around, I'm going to try to improve animal welfare by not eating animals, is along the same lines of reasoning as the devouring mother. Basically, you're compassionate to a fault because living in this idealistic world that doesn't reflect reality, that's not how the world works, you're not actually doing anything in the best interest of the animal, because it's not in the animal's best interest to not exist.
Yeah.
If you really want to help the animals, you're best off trying to improve their lives, give them as many, like try to manage their or affect their life so that they have the most possible positive experiences with the least amount of negative experiences.
Right.
That's how you truly improve their lives, not by eliminating their species.
Yes.
So that's question one. Then question two is, we have a farm, and we have a decent amount of acreage for Ontario, and a decent sized farm. What if, instead of contributing to the food system and trying to improve animal welfare and have that effect on agriculture as a whole, what if we just instead changed all of our farm over to an animal sanctuary and just kept the animals that we have now and just let them live out their life, and then ask for donations and things like that?
Right.
What would be the result as from a welfare perspective to these animals? And it sounds promising, because the animals that will be in our sanctuary would have an amazing life. They would have a very long life, not perfect. I don't think it's the perfect scenario for animal welfare, because the perfect scenario for animal welfare from a prey animal's perspective is you have a massive continent full of food and no predators, and your species can just explode in population basically to infinity, basically there's no end, there's no borders, there's no water around it. You just have expansion and food to infinity.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Ultimately, if there's no predators, the population will explode to the point where the food decreases, and then they'll either go hungry or disease will spread, and there'll be a tremendous amount of suffering until that population is kept in check in one way, form, or another.
Right.
So an animal sanctuary, the problem with animal sanctuaries is that some of those behaviors that animals would like to express, these prey animals, they can't in the situation of being in a sanctuary. They can't reproduce.
Right.
And reproduction is one of the main drives of any living thing. And these animals don't get afforded that ability to reproduce in the case of a sanctuary. So it's not a perfect system, but say we did that.
Right.
And so we did have a sanctuary, and they lived this long life. They had lots of positive experiences. Then, unfortunately, there's a relatively small number of animals that we could affect in this way on our farm. There's only several hundred animals that we'd be say, okay, these animals have an amazing life, and that's basically it. All the rest of the animals are going to continue on living the way they do. And because the scale is so much smaller, the positive impact is limited.
Yeah.
And even if all farms were to stop producing animal products and all became animal sanctuaries, there's a very, very limited number of sanctuaries that can be supported purely on donations.
Right.
So if you want all farms that produce animal products to become animal sanctuaries, most of those would suffer to the point, like those animals in those sanctuaries would suffer because there's no financial means to support them.
Yeah.
And eventually the point where there's a relatively small number of animal sanctuaries and next to no prey animals, next to no farm animals anymore. And essentially that species will cease to exist, which once again is not in the animal's best interest.
Right.
With more elites, it works really well where it's self-sustaining. If you truly want a solution to animal suffering, or basically any problem, if you truly want a solution that's sustainable, it needs to be a profitable solution. It needs to be able to sustain itself and not be dependent on donations and goodwill. Because like, what happens when you have an economic downturn and people are no longer able to support your charity or whatever? Like, it's not a very sustainable solution. Whereas a profitable solution is a sustainable solution. It sustains itself. So that's what More Eats does. It profitably improves the lives of farm animals. But it's not limited in scale, unlike an animal sanctuary would be. We can continue improving or having that positive impact on all of our farm animals throughout the life cycle of, and going from one generation to another. There's almost an unlimited number of animals that we could impact. So because scale is theoretically unlimited, even if the improvements are smaller than they would be in an animal sanctuary, the total positive impact is way, way bigger with the road that we're trying to take Moral Eats by being that leading edge on of animal welfare in agriculture and being an example. We also create lots of content and educational content where hopefully other farms will also learn and take cues. And then, so it's not just our brand, it's basically the goal is to have an impact on agriculture as a whole. So scale is massive, and because of that scale, this is the best way to improve animal welfare. And from a consumer's point of view, the best way for them to have the positive impact is to support farms like ours or any other farm that does an excellent job taking care of their animals and basically support them so that that way of farming can grow and continue and become more popular, and more farmers can adopt those practices. That's how you have a positive impact on animal welfare.
Yeah. I think that's so true. I think you really have to, you know, look and outweigh the pros and the cons. You know, I think people, you know, they get fixated on their own beliefs, but they don't look at everything as a whole. They don't look at the whole situation, and they don't look at, you know, all the different things that it entails. You know, I think you have a lot of animal lovers out there, and the fact that they think, oh, the animal is going to get slaughtered, you know, that mortifies them. But then they don't think about also what happens in the wild, and you know, and how they're not cared for. They're basically surviving on their own impacts, you know, and lots of things can occur. You know, most of the time they get eaten by larger prey, you know, or attacked by larger prey, and then also you have the illnesses, and you have, you know, the different things that occur to animals, you know, when they're out there by themselves. They don't have the capability when they get ill to have the ability to have someone care for them and take care of them. So there are lots of pros and cons that people don't think about. They just think about the one thing that gets fixated in their head, and that's it, you know. And you know,
love welfare and like that love animals, try to find wild animals and try to find that as being the most humane meat that they could eat. And it is great in a lot of ways, as long as you have a clean kill, because unfortunately, if you don't have a clean kill, there is a tremendous amount of suffering involved. And that can happen where either the aim is off or the animal moves at the last moment. Like, it's not a perfect system. It's not managed to the same degree as humane slaughter in a slaughterhouse would be. It's much more consistent and reliable humane slaughter as opposed to hunting. But you can make the argument that farmed prey animals actually have a better life than wild prey animals.
Right.
Like you mentioned, the fact that there's medicine. If an animal gets sick, they can get medicine, which they wouldn't in the wild. Or if they just get injured, they can get a little bit of TLC. We have a little sick pen where we could put them. There's a deep pack of bedding and lots of open space where, and then we can separate them from the rest of the animals so that they can just nurse their wound and improve and heal over time. And we bring them water or bring them feed. They don't lose condition to the same way, because they they have all that food still available despite that, maybe that despite them not being as mobile. Whereas in
Yes.
the wild, as soon as you're weak or immobile in any way, you're easy pickings from for predators. So
Right.
if you're too old, too slow, or if you have a limp, there's been studies where they can flag any animal, even if it's one of the strongest animals in a herd. And if they flag it or paint it or make it recognizable, easily recognizable, those are always the animals that get eaten first by predators because you can single them out. And that's
Yeah.
basically evolved so that they can focus on animals that like that are, have a limp or something like that, that they move differently. And doesn't it matter what the reason is, if it's a red flag or a piece of paint or a bad limp or something, a swollen joint, like it doesn't matter what it is, if it allows the predators to single out that one animal out of a whole herd, they become vulnerable to being eaten. So you don't have that in animal agriculture.
Yes.
You can we can manage it, and we can give these weak animals some TLC and nurse them back to health so they have a second chance at life and they can thrive once again. And commercial agriculture as a whole is constantly improving. Like I've talked before about some of the horrible conditions that some of the raw milk was produced in the beginning in these
Yeah.
warehouses in the middle of a city where it's dark, dingy, and dirty. And these animals were fed an unnatural diet where they're basically given nothing but the byproducts of the brewery industry.
Yeah.
And these people were sickly and suffering. And they didn't even produce true milk anymore. And
No.
that's basically when pasteurization became really popular. Like that's one example of where the industry was at one point. But it's constantly improving to the point now that it's unrecognizable from where it was. And cow comfort and designing for space and welfare is the norm. It's in the consideration of anybody building a new barn.
Yes.
So it's constantly improving, and it constantly improves because the best interests of the farmer and the animal are aligned.
Yeah.
What's As the animal thrives, they produce better. Either they'll gain weight better or they'll produce more milk or more eggs. Basically, their welfare improves their production. And so
Right.
that's in the best interest of the farmer. And that's why it's just this trend of constant improvement.
Right.
So, but then beyond that, there's also the base level of anxiety that's very different. And I don't hear many people talking about this between a wild animal and a domesticated animal.
Right.
There's in Russia, there's this study, an ongoing study where they're trying to domesticate fox.
Oh,
And
wow.
they basically breed them for nothing but tameness. They'll measure how tame these animals are, and they'll only breed for the ones that are the most calm around people. And they're trying to, over generations and generations and generation, and make the most tame animal, and it doesn't matter what the consequences are. And there's some interesting side effects to that, where the fox will start wagging their tails, their ears will start to droop, and
I
stuff like
heard
that.
of
These changes that make them almost more look more like a dog.
Yeah.
That so like and but. Despite the fact of, I don't even know how many generations they've been breeding these foxes already, if you're nothing but tameness, they are still uneasy when you compare it. Like, they're still more uneasy around people compared to dogs. If you
Right.
put them in a room and a person sits in a circle and you count how many times a fox enters the circle to kind of check out this person, this stranger, it still does not come anywhere close to a dog. The dog is still way more comfortable. And that's basically because of a level of anxiety. They have a much higher level of anxiety despite being bred for generations to be calm.
Right.
So if you go back to the original fox or any wild animal, that base level of anxiety is so much higher, and
Yeah.
it should be for their survival. Like if they weren't anxious for anything new or different in their environment, they would have
Yeah.
gotten eaten. Because that anxiety causes them to focus and be alert and always be on watch. And
Right.
so there's that survivability around it. So wild animals will have a much higher base level of anxiety than a prey animal that's on a farm.
Yeah.
like if I come into the barn, it doesn't necessarily matter what time of day, but there'll be cows passed out on their side and just sleeping without a care in the world
Right.
because they it's bred out of them.
Yeah.
They're so they've been domesticated for so long, they don't have that fear.
Right.
To say they don't have fear at all would be a lie. They still have some fear. They're still a prey animal. There's still some of those base instincts.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, something new happens, they're fearful. But they see me every day, and it's crazy how calm they can truly be. And that's like, and when they're that calm, the beauty is that's when their different personalities start to shine because it's not just they're all fearful and they all seem the same. They're all reacting the same.
Right.
It's because they're so calm and so they're so used to their environment and used to us as people. You start noticing differences in personalities, and they are wild differences in their different personalities. You have some that are very goofy, other ones that are playful, and other ones that are just really sweet and friendly. And other ones, as they get more and more calm and friendly, they almost get more aggressive. They almost get like too dominant.
Oh,
So
really?
there's, and so you gotta watch your back with some of these animals because they don't fear us anymore. So then I don't know, they seem to treat us like a herd mate,
Oh,
and
wow.
they add you to the pecking order, so to speak,
Yeah.
and show their dominance. So like you have to be careful in those circumstances, but there's all these different this whole rainbow of different personalities arise once you have a barn full of calm, happy, collected animals.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's very cool. I like that. It's funny how they all have, they have their different personalities, and they get more comfortable with you, and the more they get comfortable with you, the more they kind of let it shine. I think, when you don't really think about that, you don't, because you're used to just knowing the standard, let's say cow, and you don't think that, just like humans, they all have their own individualized personalities, which would make sense, But it's funny how you say some are goofy and some are this and some are that, I don't, in my head, I'm like, wow, a cow being goofy. But it makes sense when you say it, It's like they all have their own personality, like
Yeah, sometimes
humans.
I'm able to catch it on video, but it's like as soon as like a stranger comes in, like they actually recognize they don't treat us all the same. There's some animals that treat me differently than our employees, and the other way around too. Like our employees might have some of their favorite animals, and this animal will treat that employee differently than they treat me
Right.
because yeah, that's like so like they recognize differences. So if you come into a farmer's barn, these animals won't be tr they won't treat you the same way they treat me,
Right.
and I'm able to catch some of this on video sometimes, like when I'm walking through the barn and I'll have a cow that's just she's in a playful mood and she'll follow me through the whole barn, hopping and skipping and jumping, throwing her head around and having a good time. And people love it when I show that because like you see, like I didn't know animals did that, like or
Yeah.
cows did. Absolutely. Yeah, they can be very silly.
I didn't know that either, but when you say it, it makes sense, but you don't think about that, because you're just, you're raised to think about cows being a certain way, with their herd and da da da. But it's kind of funny. You should start to videotape that and maybe put it online or something, because that would be really cool.
I have, yeah. And there's other cows too. Like I'm a huge fan of our older cows. But there's some old cows that I try as I might. Like I just give them all the attention that I can. Whenever I see them, I stop and say hi and pet them and everything else. But like they couldn't care less. Like they've been through the ropes and like they know how their world works and like they know what it's all about and they're just indifferent. They don't care for me as much as I care for them. It's like I was like because like I want this cow to be a friendly cow and like be affectionate animal like and I'm trying to make her calm, trying to make her basically because I appreciate the time that she's put into our farm
Yeah.
and I really want a barn full of just ancient cows.
Right.
So, but unfortunately, like this cow is just like her personality is just she just doesn't care for people.
She's just
It's
not a
me.
socialite. She's a loner.
Like, oh, she's plenty social with the other cows, but like with me, she's just. No, indifferent. And then she'll like, I'll pet her and she'll just walk off. Not in a hurry. She'll just would rather be somewhere else.
Right. It's kind of like humans. Sometimes you meet somebody, and you're like, okay, they're nice, but they're not for me. It's like,
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. I love it. Now, if you had to, like, when it comes to the listeners, like, if you had to really, like, sum up animal welfare, is there certain things you'd like to stress and make people realize, the listeners, about animal welfare?
Yeah, I feel like if you start doing some research on animal welfare, the information you find is very muddy, and there's always people with their own goals as far as creating that information or that content. And like I'm not unbiased myself. I have my own biases. I've obviously I create a living with using animal products, so I'm biased as well, and you need to know that. And if will that affect information that I put out there, and it's impossible for it not to. And like everybody has biases, so you have to always ask yourself that. And so you combine that with the fact that like the dramatic difference in commercial agriculture that's happened over the years between where it was and where it is now and where it's going, like that's just commercial agriculture, not a local farmer who you know, or somebody myself that's trying to make a difference in animal welfare, or the industry average has improved so dramatically, it's almost unrecognizable. And you combine that with like, so then if you look at some of this footage and you see like, unfortunately, abuse does happen. There are bad apples. There are farmers out there that treat their animals horribly and should no longer be farmers. Like these things exist. But if you see footage out there, like ask yourself, how long ago was this footage created? What, how long was it recorded? How long ago was it recorded? So like it's constantly improving. So like some old footage, a lot of stuff that you might see probably might not even happen anymore at all, or happen in the on these rare cases where you have a lot of unfortunate things that kind of stack on top of each other. Like personally, I believe like massive farms in of itself is not an issue. If you have 1,000 cow dairies or whatever else, that in of itself does not create a welfare concern. These animals that live on this farm can still have an amazing life. They can still have be housed in a very ideal environment. The sheer number does not decrease animal welfare, because if you really think about it, the bison, herds of bison, there were huge, massive herds of bison that used to roam North America, and nobody would have been about their welfare. So it's not a matter of numbers. But like it becomes a concern when you start stacking these unfortunate events. Like if you have an owner of the farm that's just an investor, and all that, they're just looking at the farm as an investment and it needs to create a return. That's the owner. And then you start having managers on that farm that also don't work with the animals themselves. All they do is try to make sure that the farm stays profitable, and that's their only incentive from the investors is make sure you're making the investors money. And then you start having employees on this farm that, because like it's a huge farm, and you end up doing more repetitive work, it's more factory style work. People are interested in doing that work. It's not people that are passionate about working with animals. It's not impossible, but typically it might not be those people that are very passionate about working with animals. It's people that want a paycheck. They just want to go in and out and get their money. So then those people, especially like if you're in a parlor or something like that, it's just like they are heavily incentivized to push these animals through as quick as possible, and like get paid per hour. And then they want to see the managers want to see a certain amount of work done in that time, and that's how they grade the quality of these employees. So what happens in this when you have these stacked levels of the wrong incentives, and all of a sudden you have an animal that falls or gets in, or a freak accident happens, and the level of frustration that those base employees is feel, and that aren't even necessarily animal lovers, they're just trying to get their paycheck, like it's a recipe for abuse. So like unfortunately things like that can happen, and like when it does, they need to be reprimanded. The industry needs to talk about it, and what do you call it? Not condone, but the opposite of condone this behavior. but like basically, like, and then the industry also needs to learn from it to figure out how do you prevent these atrocities from happening. So like all those things that need to be kept in mind mind by the average consumer when you're doing research about animal welfare. And then, but like when these atrocities do happen, change needs to occur. And
yes,
and then, but and there's always room for improvement. Even on our farm, when we're actively trying to improve animal welfare, I'll never get to the point where my work is done. There's always room for improvement. So like, we gotta like check our ego at the door. Don't be overly sensitive when you get accusations, and just constantly try to improve. And then that'll give the consumer that opportunity to vote with their food dollars and find those local farmers or that do care about their animals and try to find ways to improve welfare. But like another thing too is like that to say along those lines of thinking is like those, even in the US, the vast majorities of farmers are family owned. It's not this recipe for disaster for welfare spoke about, where you have these investors and you have these several layers of people that are only interested in profits and nothing else. The typical farmer is a family owned farm. And even when you have these instances where it is an investor that it's not that owns the farm, it's not impossible for them to manage the farm in a way where the animal welfare is amazing. Because like I said before, those goals are aligned. The better that the animal does, the animal is, the better they produce. And so it is in the best interest of the investors to have high welfare and have animals that have an amazing life.
Right. Oh, I agree. I agree totally. And I think, you know, there is a lot of misinformation out there. And I think sometimes when negativity happens, they focus more on the negativity, and then people think everyone's like that. And they don't realize that you know, the agriculture has changed a lot over the course of the years, and that it's no longer the way people think it is, and that it's improved vastly, like you mentioned, you know. And I think we really need to get that out there.
That's right. Yeah. Your typical food. Yeah, it has improved dramatically over the years. That's right.
Definitely. And if you had to inform everybody, I just want everybody to know the different services that you provide. Can you tell everybody all the different things that you provide in on your website?
I'd love to. Yeah, we specialize in animal products because we're trying to produce everything that we produce, we're trying to do it in a way that will have a positive impact on animal welfare.
Right.
So we started with our grass-fed beef, and the way we try to improve welfare with our grass-fed beef is we're sourcing them exclusively from the dairy industry. So, and then there's a huge opportunity to improve welfare for the bull calves of the dairy industry. Like they either in the worst case scenario, the farmer can't even afford to raise those bull calves. So then that's not very common, but it has happened, and it probably still happening in some parts of the world. So that's worst case scenario for these bull calves. But then a better step above that, you have the veal industry. The veal industry is also not perfect. They treat their animals well because you don't have those typically the veal industry is not raising their calves the way they sometimes have been, where they're fed nothing but milk and kept in really small contained areas. I feel like the sentiment from the consumer has been heard loud and clear. So typically that's not how their veal is raised anymore.
Yeah.
But they have a shorter life. They have a life, they typically live 7 to 8 months. So and then the regular steers, the regular grain finished steers live to be 15, 16 months old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an improvement again. And they probably, the typical grain finished beef has spent some of its life on pasture. But what we're doing with ours is we're taking it to the extreme, and we raise them as grass-fed, grass-finished, which normally wouldn't even be possible to do it in a profitable way. But our bull calves from the dairy industry that we source from Orleans, they're crossbred to beef. So they have the extra genetics to put on fat better than the typical dairy animal. So they it is actually possible to raise them as grass-fed beef. So, but because they're grass-fed, grass-finished, it takes longer for them to put on that layer of fat and be ready for to be eaten. They typically live 24, 25, 26 months old. They've reached their full maturity. They're adult animals, and they've had many months and multiple seasons on pasture. So it's a positive impact on many levels. And then we also produce pasture turkeys, which actually follow in behind our grass-fed beef. They're 3 days behind, and then they it kind of mimics the natural system where there would be wild birds following the massive herds of bison across North America. We're mimicking that system, and because they complement each other really well. You have the turkeys, they have a hard time walking through the tall grass. So the beef eat that shorter, and then they move on, and they also leave behind piles of manure.
Okay.
And then the manure attracts insects. And then there's lots of insects in general out there on pasture. So the turkeys are eating the insects, and they're also eating the fly larvae and other insects that are attracted to the manure. And in the meantime, they spread that manure out. So they're spreading out the nutrients that are left behind by the steers. But they also add their own manure. And turkey manure is unique in that it's very high in nitrogen, which grass loves. Grass grows really well with nitrogen. So then they complement the bulls, because when the bulls come back around or the steers come back around, they have the extra growth from the nitrogen from the turkey manure. And it also as a farmer that needs to find a profitable solution to animal welfare, because now I have on the same piece of land, the same piece of pasture, the same acreage, I have the grass-fed beef and I have the pasture turkeys. But it really helps with the profitability of regenerative agriculture and trying to improve animal welfare. And that can make me sound like a greedy farmer, but you have to remember it is critical for there to be a sustainable solution, that it has to be a profitable solution.
Right. Exactly.
And then we use those same, this is the same management style also for our pastured pork, that are they're rotationally grazed, and they're moving every single day to fresh pasture or to a fresh piece of woodlot. Like they're moved every single day. And then because the turkeys and the pigs are monogastrics, they can't survive on nothing but forage and grasses. So they have the supplemental non-GMO feed. But then we also source wild seafood. We look for ones that have like an MSC rating on it, that has that the proof of sustainability, that they're not overfishing when populations are low. They back off and they fish in a way that doesn't damage the environment. They're basically managed in a way that's sustainable.
Right.
So that's all of our seafood is wild and has a rating for sustainability. So we have offered, those are the products that we offer at the moment, but we have lots of themes and plans moving forward to find ways to improve welfare for all the different categories of animal protein. And it's like for chickens, there's a huge opportunity to improve welfare in chickens, because they're arguably the ones that need the biggest innovation for welfare, because you have the laying chickens.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, all the male layers, they have no purpose. So none of them live past hatching, which is very unfortunate from a welfare perspective. But then also the broiler side, they're bred to such an extreme for growing and putting on weight that they reach slaughter size by 6 weeks of age, which is exactly, like, people don't realize when you're shopping and you pick the chicken breast as 10 cents cheaper than the one beside it, what you're saying is I want profitability at all expense. It doesn't like that's what you're telling the farmer to produce. So like, that is the result, that is the demand that you're creating, is these chicks that live to be 6 weeks old. So there's a huge opportunity to bring back these heritage breeds, which unfortunately are not as efficient, though, but they live a longer life.
Yeah.
So because they live a longer life, they need to be fed for more days. So this food would be more expensive. But there's a real opportunity of having these dual purpose heritage breeds that live longer. Plus, because they're dual purpose, the layers, the females you can get the eggs from, and then the males you can still use for the meat. Of the chicken meat. So like, you had that, there's a real opportunity there. And there's also we also have really big plans for the dairy industry, and I know the dairy industry very well, because that's what I grew up on, a commercial dairy farm. We still produce dairy, we still produce milk for the commercial market. We don't offer it yet for Moral Eats because it's not yet on brand. Like, our cows have an amazing life, but it's not, I'm not happy enough to say that this is at the leading edge of welfare. There's lots of dairy farmers that do an amazing job
right.
with their cow, that are animal lovers like we are, that do a good job. But what would be a massive step forward from a welfare perspective is if we are find a way that we can allow those dairy cows to raise their own calf up until weaning and allow them to express their maternal behaviors. If we can find a way to do that where the calves stay healthy, which is the reason why they're typically removed, is that typically the cows not stay healthy.
Right.
Then we had a very unique product that actually is a step forward for animal welfare. And then that's something that we want to offer on our online store, Moral Eats, and like deliver that to people as well, is something called like cow with calf dairy, where all the cows get to raise and mother their own calf up until weaning. And it's considered impossible if you ask anybody in the dairy industry, but we've been experimenting carefully with it for years.
Yeah.
And I know now beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is possible at scale. And I just need to I need to be able to grow the dairy to the point, and then need to grow more elites where we have the demand for our products and for support for our mission.
Right.
To make this massive investment, and we can create a pen large enough for all of our cows to stay together with their calves, because they need to be managed in a unique way, and they need to be in a unique environment so the calves especially can thrive together. So like I've got a long list of things that I would do in this situation to make it possible based off of the experiments that I've been doing on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Because we do have fresh cow pack. We built the barn where the cows actually have their baby calf, a spot where they can, that's really quiet and secluded, where they can stay for about 10 days to 2 weeks on average, and then go out to the main herd, a larger group of cows. We have this pen that we would need to keep the cows and calves together. That's where we've been keeping them. But because the pen is not big enough for all of our fresh cows to stay in, we're only able to do groups of five calves at a time. And we're constantly comparing those to the other calves that are still managed in the typical way. So what I would need to do is I would need to build an extension to our barn and have a big enough, quiet, secluded pen for all the fresh cows to stay for 2 months, which is typically at the age where you start weaning the calves. That's when they have enough growth, and then where you typically transition them into solid feeds. So all those other things are in the works for Moral Eats, of products that we want to create and produce and bring to North America.
That's amazing. And do you have any time frame? Do you think maybe next year you'll probably be in the US? Is that where you're trying to, your goal is?
Not in the US, no. The US would be that'll be more in the long term. And I feel like first I need to grow the brand for the proteins that we're already producing, the animal products. And once I have that growth, then I can make that massive investment on our dairy side to create the cow with calf dairy.
Right.
And that is a truly unique product. We're like, yes, the emphasis, like we're using all these products, we're using all of these different products that we create to improve animal welfare, but like grass-fed meat already exists. It's just not part of the dairy industry. And like pastured turkey already exists, and pastured pork already exists. Like, it's not a unique enough product for me to grow rapidly and bring it to the States.
Right.
Oh, there's multiple steps that need to happen first, unfortunately, before I can bring our whole brand into the US, which I do have the ambition to do. It is part of my hopes and dreams for Moral Eats, is to come to the States. But yeah, it's hard to say how quick I'm able to grow the brand for Moral Eats to the point where it makes sense to make that investment into the dairy side. And then once the dust settles on that, then I can start looking farther and chasing some of those larger ambitions that I have. So it's hard to give it an exact timeline, because like especially step one, which is growing the brand and being able to gain customers, there's a lot of unknowns there still. I haven't figured out the perfect formula saying like now I like to turn this off and off switch to gaining customers or and finding that support. Like I don't have the answer yet to do that easily. So that's like I've been doing like the social media content and trying different types of paid advertising and reach outs and now talking on podcasts like yours. It's a growing it's a continuous experimentation of how do I find people, how do I bring that awareness and create that support to bring this movement forward where we can have this massive impact on the agriculture as a whole.
Yes, and I think it's definitely going to be coming soon down the market because people want healthier foods. They don't want the processed foods, and people are realizing how bad processed foods are, and the difference between good meat and bad meat, and how some farms don't put really great things in their meat, or their processes, but you do have, like you said, there's been a vast improvement. So it's refreshing to know that. But if people wanted to get in contact with you specifically, what's your website address?
Our website is moraleats.com, moraleats.com. And there you can find our online store. You can find lots of educational information about what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish. And you can also find links to our social medias. And we also have a plot where you can sign up to our email on there. And anybody who does that lives in Ontario, which is what we're servicing at the moment, has the opportunity to win a free sample box to try out all of our products.
Oh, that's awesome. And if they want to contact you with any questions, is there like a contact area that they can probably contact you directly on the website?
That's right. Yeah. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. But we do have our email address on there as info@moraleats.com. And I read all those emails myself. So, yeah, I'll probably respond to that directly myself if you have any questions or comments or anything you might want to say.
That's awesome. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Sander, for coming on the show today. And everybody remember that Sander has his own podcast show and he's on our podcast community. So if you'd like to check out his show and all his past episodes, go to the Advisor with Stacey Chalemi, and his podcast will be under there with all his different episodes. So, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Sander, for coming on the show today. And everything that you've been sharing, in these last, weeks and months have been amazing. You've really educated society a lot about what goes on in react culture and the importance of taking care of the animals and the effect it has on human beings also and on our health.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a pleasure to have that the stage to share this information. And hopefully people listen because yeah, there is a lot of valuable information in there and lots of opportunities for change and improvements. So yeah, and a lot of things too, like the perspective of the commercial farmer is not spoken about very often. So like I like to try to speak from both sides of the story, like where we're heading, things that we could create, as well as the commercial side of things, which is there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I'd like to clear that up while I'm at it.
And I think it's important to do that because I think, people focus too much on the misinformation. And like you said earlier, it depends who's writing it and what their purpose is. So it's good to have people like you who actually are speaking from the heart and sharing the truth. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been great.
So thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to our next show together.
Very welcome. I look forward to it as well.
Okay. You have a great day.
See you back.
Bye-bye.